On a bright June morning in 1923, Clarissa Dalloway steps into the London streets to buy flowers for her party. This simple errand launches us into the intricate web of her consciousness, where present sensations constantly intertwine with memories of her youth at Borton. As Big Ben strikes the hours throughout the day, its sound reverberates through the minds of characters moving through post-war London, a city vibrant yet haunted by recent trauma. The novel unfolds entirely on this single day, yet contains within it entire lifetimes of love, regret, joy, and suffering. Through Clarissa's party preparations, we experience her appreciation for life's sensory pleasures alongside her awareness of mortality. In people's eyes, in the swing, tramp, and trudge, was what she loved. Life, London, this moment of June. This intensity of perception isn't merely aesthetic, but existential. Having recently recovered from illness, Clarissa moves through her day with heightened awareness of life's preciousness and brevity. What makes this novel revolutionary is how it plunges us directly into the flow of consciousness. Rather than observing characters from outside, we experience their thoughts from within, associative, fragmentary, and shifting between present and past. A backfiring car might trigger memories of wartime explosions. An old acquaintance resurrects decades-old emotions. When Peter Walsh visits Clarissa after years abroad, their spoken exchange remains trivial, while their thoughts reveal their complex history. For the truth is, let her mind run on, that she had known all along that something would interrupt, would embitter her moment of happiness. The narrative shifts between perspectives without warning, sometimes mid-paragraph, creating a collective consciousness of the city itself. Through this approach, the novel suggests that beneath our separate exteriors lies a profound interconnectedness, transforming a simple story about a woman's party into an exploration of how consciousness shapes reality. At 52, Clarissa Dalloway embodies contradictions. Outwardly, she's the quintessential society hostess, elegant, charming, skilled at creating connections. Yet internally, she questions her choices and paths not taken. She had the oddest sense of being herself invisible, unseen, unknown, this being Mrs. Dalloway, not even Clarissa anymore, this being Mrs. Richard Dalloway. Her marriage to Richard offers security but lacks the passion she once felt for Peter Walsh or Sally Seton. Across London, Septimus Warren Smith, a war veteran suffering from what we now recognize as PTSD, wanders the same streets in psychological disintegration. Though they never meet, Septimus functions as Clarissa's double, experiencing similar sensitivities but without her social protections. Where Clarissa channels her aesthetic sensibility into creating beautiful social moments, Septimus's perceptions overwhelm him. The world wavered and quivered and threatened to burst into flames. Their parallel journeys suggest that sanity might be partly a privilege of class and circumstance rather than an inherent quality. 5 years after World War I, trauma still echoes through London. Septimus Warren Smith embodies this unprocessed grief, an idealistic poet who returned fundamentally broken. When he felt nothing at his friend Evan's death, Septimus diagnosed himself as emotionally damaged. He had gone through the whole show, friendship, European war, death, had won promotion, was still under 30, and was bound to survive. Now he hallucinates Evans in crowds, believes trees communicate secret messages, and feels overwhelmed by ordinary sensations. The medical establishment responds with callousness. Dr. Holmes dismisses his condition as nothing whatever the matter, while Sir William Bradshaw speaks of proportion while recommending institutionalization. Neither sees Septimus as fully human. Both represent authorities' failure to address suffering. Their treatments, rest, isolation, forced feeding, seem designed to silence rather than heal. Through Septimus, Wolfe creates a profound portrait of trauma, anticipating modern psychological understanding by decades. His suicide becomes an act of defiance against controlling forces that sent young men to slaughter, then expected them to readjust without acknowledging their experiences. Memory functions as an active force shaping each character's present experience in Mrs. Dalloway. As Clarissa walks through Westminster, her perceptions blend with memories of her youth at Borton. Her recollection of Sally Seton's kiss remains the most exquisite moment of her whole life, representing an intensity her conventional marriage lacks. Peter Walsh experiences London through double vision, seeing both its present reality and the city he knew before India. For Septimus, memory manifests as trauma, with memories of Evans emerging as hallucinations that collapse the boundary between past and present. The novel suggests identity is fluid, a continuous negotiation between past and present selves. Through this treatment of memory, Wolfe captures how consciousness works not linearly, but in associative leaps across time, with lives as complex webs of moments constantly redefining each other. A central tension in the novel is between characters' rich internal lives and their social roles. Clarissa is acutely aware of the division between her public identity as the perfect hostess and her private doubts about life's meaning. This division manifests physically in her home. The drawing room for parties represents her public self, while her attic bedroom, where she sleeps alone like a nun, embodies her private existence. For Septimus, this division becomes pathological when his doctors demand he display proportion while ignoring his actual experience, prioritizing performance of normalcy over understanding. The novel suggests modern urban life intensifies this split between inner and outer selves, requiring constant self-presentation among strangers, while social conventions restrict authentic expression. Wolfe's stream of consciousness technique powerfully reveals the gap between thought and speech, contrasting characters' rich internal monologues with their often banal conversations. Through this examination, Wolfe suggests authentic connection requires bridging this gap, allowing glimpses of our true experience. As evening falls, the novel's disparate threads converge at Clarissa's party, a gathering that becomes both the culmination of the day's events and a microcosm of connection and isolation. The momentum is interrupted by news of Septimus's suicide, delivered casually by Sir William Bradshaw. Though Clarissa never met Septimus, his death affects her profoundly. Always her body went through it first, when she was told, suddenly, of an accident. Her dress flamed, her body burnt. Retreating from her guests, she contemplates the stranger's death with unexpected intimacy. Death was defiance. Death was an attempt to communicate. The novel creates its most powerful connection between the society hostess and the traumatized veteran whose experiences mirror each other. Clarissa's return to her party represents acceptance of life's contradictions. The novel ends with Peter's perception. "It is Clarissa," he said, "for there she was." In a fragmented world, Mrs. Dalloway reminds us of consciousness's profound interconnectedness. Though we experience life separately, our minds constantly reach toward others through memory, empathy, and shared urban rhythms. Clarissa's parties enact what the novel itself achieves, bringing diverse lives into meaningful, if temporary, communion. This explains why Wolfe's century-old experiment still resonates. It captures how we experience being human, not as isolated individuals, but as nodes in a vast web of connection, our separate selves dissolving into something larger.